How's the film going, Gary, if you can talk about it?
It's going well. I finally was able to, you know, hand in my work, which is why, you know, I'm able to have some free time again for a bit. So that's great.
Save that part for the podcast. All right, so should we do this?
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 143 for August 7th, 2008. This week, Grand Theft Auto 4 finally announced for the PC. Fallout 3 wins Best of Show at E3, for whatever that's worth. Want to buy GameTap? Call Time Warner. NVIDIA is revving up PhysX supports on a wider range of cards. Ubisoft says Assassin's Creed PC piracy was an inside job. Blizzard offers fabulous prizes to get you to get your friends into World of Warcraft. StarCraft Online resurfaces a cryptic. All that and infinitely more, including taking listener questions, after this musical interlude. All right, I'm Dan Stapleton, and today I'm hosting our panel consisting of our executive editor Logan Decker.
Hello.
Brand new associate editor Evan Lottie.
I'm glad to be here. Hey, guys.
And back by popular demand, former editor-in-chief, former Backspace columnist, and former NAMBLA member, Gary Witta.
Hello there.
And our producer, Andy Baum.
What's up, guys?
So, lots and lots of stuff to talk about today. Let's kick it off with GTA 4 finally coming out for the PC on November 14th, says Rockstar. Who's excited?
PC Gamer Malaysia, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, this means that you guys have to start paying attention to them and, you know, following what they're doing, because they're right all the time.
it's not like we didn't all know this was happening anyway, but
that's,
you know,
true. I'm just kidding.
We now know it.
I guess I'm mildly excited, but just after all the hype and all that, and you know, all the 10 out of 10, I feel like the game's almost a bit ruined for me by the time I'll get to play it in November. You know,
I don't know. I've been abstaining from it just to be able to play it on the PC. And by the way, I'm thrilled that it's actually coming out like less than 6 months after it came out.
Yeah,
on
that
consoles.
Is nice. Yeah.
That's a nice bump up in the treatment we've been getting from this series. So, also the one bit of information that's out there is that somehow the multiplayer functionality will be enhanced for PC. So we're not sure what that means yet, but there will be enhanced multiplayer.
Yeah, they said newly enhanced as opposed to oldly enhanced.
So yeah, I'm glad it didn't take as long. But that's also one of the reasons I bought it on PlayStation 3 and already played through it, is because I thought it would take, you know, a year. But I'm excited to play it again on PC just so I can get a decent frame rate.
Was it that bad? Yeah. Was it that bad on the PS3?
I mean, it's playable, but certainly you notice it. You're like, wow, I'm not used to playing games at this low of a frame rate. So
really,
I'll be excited again if I hear that there will be no checkpoints.
Checkpoints,
but yeah. I'm not going to get my hopes up.
No, you got to go to the safe houses.
Yeah, that's dude. It's the last one, so I wouldn't be surprised. And you know, it's actually not that big a deal in GTA, because at least it's somewhere you can go, like, you know, when you need to.
And in GTA 4, you can fast travel basically by hailing a cab, and it's a lot easier to get to the safe houses that way. So it's not quite as bad.
So it's not like you have to like get to a certain point and then you can save. Although it would be, you know, much preferable, obviously, to be able to save during missions if there's like a part that you get to that's hard.
Oh yeah, like saving halfway through the bank mission would be awesome.
Yeah, plus for girls, though, that's for little babies. The whole idea of incrementally saving through a mission—that's not the way a real man plays.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't want to be told by a game when I can get up and leave and just stop playing. You know,
bit annoying when you decide that you're done for the night. You can't just switch off. You do have to get back to a safe house.
Yeah,
but you know I guess the compromise version would be anytime you're not engaged in a mission, you can save at any time. But once you actually start a mission, then the save gets turned off. Because otherwise it's too easy to, like, okay, I've done this part of the mission, now I'm going to save and do the next part. It's much more exhilarating, in my experience, because I played a ton of GTA 4, and some of the missions are really, really hard, and they can be really frustrating when you're forced to retry them and retry them. But what it means is when you finally complete it, it's that much more satisfying, because you know you did it all in one go, and not kind of save-cheated your way through it.
But you know, you can do that on your own if that's how you get your kicks. I mean, you don't have to save. I do like the ability to save. Like, if I am getting frustrated, I don't want to be frustrated when I'm playing a game. I want to be having fun.
And one of the things it does to mitigate sort of that feeling of loss when you fail a mission or something, when you restart, like you're in the car driving with your associates to a mission, and they'll have actually different voice tracks. They'll sort of talk about the same things, but it'll be, you know, a different script, and that sort of keeps it a little fresher, I think. It's a nice touch.
I was actually stunned the first time that I started playing it, just how much content there is in the game. I mean, it's weird. And a little bit stuff. I mean, you can sit in your apartment and watch TV for hours. You know, there's so much radio and so much TV and so much stuff going on. You can go and see shows, and there's so much. You could play for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and never hear the same line of dialogue twice. It's pretty amazing how much they jammed into the console version. So I'm pretty excited about the PC version. I'll definitely play it through again, just because, you know, historically the PC version, even though you've had to wait longer for it, has turned out to be kind of the definitive version, because, you know, you get the highest frame rate, the highest screen resolutions, and it's usually moddable as well. There have been great PC mods that have come out through the PC version that you're just not going to see on the console versions.
Yeah, for me, that's a huge selling point, especially with an open world game like that where people can mod in their own vehicles. That's awesome. I had a lot of fun playing around with some GTA 3 mods.
I have my fingers crossed for a Cloverfield mod. Please, please.
Yes.
But you just want there to be a bunch of annoying people running around in the game?
Have they said anything about actually how moddable it's going to be? Because it's possible after Hot Coffee that they may have taken some steps to try and prevent something like that from happening again.
So I think that after Hot Coffee they probably took some steps to like clean up their internal development. They probably were like watching themselves like hawks to make sure that didn't happen again. So I doubt they would like make it harder to mod content. So that just takes away a selling point. But anyway, moving on. One more before we move on. I'm really looking forward to playing it with a mouse and keyboard. Like, not the driving parts. I might even use a control pad for that, but the shooting parts definitely. So yeah, moving on.
Hold on. Just before you move on, you may want to revisit that. Actually, give the gamepad version of the shooting a try, because it's been massively overhauled since the last game. It's better.
I'd give it some credit. It's got a good system with the auto save or auto aim and the crouch system, like the cover fire system. It's not too bad.
Right. I did give it a try on the console briefly, just to see how it went, and just auto aim in general just annoys me. So I won't be using that. But okay, now we're moving on. Fallout 3 won the best of show at the E3 Critics Awards, which is, I guess, the heads of a bunch of magazines, including Kristen, got to vote for, or magazines and online publications, of course, got to vote for the best games of the show, best, you know, in a bunch of categories. Fallout 3 won best of show. Mirror's Edge won best original game. Best console game was Little Big Planet. Best PC game, Spore. Handheld game, Resistance, Retribution, et cetera, et cetera. I guess best action game, I'll just give some highlights here. Best action game was Gears of War 2. Best action adventures, Dead Space. Fallout 1 again, for role-playing. And racing was Pure, Sports, Madden NFL 07. Fighting game, Street Fighter 4. Strategy game, Tom Clancy's End War. And best online multiplayer is Left 4 Dead. So I think that's all, you know, pretty good choices. Anyone dispute any of those?
No, but I'm really, really looking forward to Dead Space.
Yeah.
It looks scary, like really scary.
I think I dispute the strategy game. I don't think End War is going to be the best strategy game in the next, or probably shown there. I think Dawn of War 2 was shown, which looks amazing. StarCraft 2, I guess, wasn't shown because Activision wasn't there, but... So I guess that's not in the running.
I like what they're doing with Dead Space. It's kind of an extension of what Half-Life did, where the player never gets taken out of the action via cutscenes or anything. And they're really taking that to the next level and stripping it down to its bare essentials, where even, you know, all the HUD, you know, the, you know, your health and everything that you see on screen, is there's no actual kind of on-screen, you know, GUI. Everything is represented visually as part of the game. you know, graphics. And so, you know, they're really trying to kind of draw you in as much as possible and strip away everything that makes you that might remind you that you're playing in a game. And I think that's a really smart idea.
Yeah. Well, very, very immersive. And I heard at one point people were worried they weren't going to let you pause.
I had heard about that, yeah.
But I guess they came out and clarified. They came out and clarified that you can pause. So you can go to the bathroom without dying. So
they should do what Fatal Frame did, though. There's, you know, I don't know if they did. Fatal Frame ever come to the PC?
No.
Did they ever do PC versions?
No, but I played them both, 1 and 2, twice on my Xbox.
Yeah, okay, so you'll know what I'm talking about. They're the scariest games I've ever played, and I was playing Fatal Frame 2.
Easily.
So scary. I was playing Fatal Frame 2 on the PlayStation 2, and it got too intense, so I decided to pause it for a bit, and I was like reading a magazine, and what they don't tell you is that even in pause mode, the game will occasionally have things jump out at you.
Yeah.
Like, not actually anything like that affects the game, but just, you know, you'll hear like a creepy graphical or a creepy, like, I noticed that there was like a creepy Japanese ghost girl's face like fading into the screen and staring at me in pause mode, and it would start making these weird noises. So even in pause mode, you don't get any relief. Maybe they should take a leaf out of Fatal Frame's book and have it be something like that. So it's kind of a game pause mode, but it's not an intensity pause mode. Like, the game
that,
is always
that really keep you out. Both of them, you're absolutely right. The most scary video games I have ever played. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, and sort of along those lines, one of the things with Resident Evil 4 was with your inventory system, it was essentially your pause menu. You're going through it all the time to change your weapons, you know, switch to grenades and whatnot. I haven't played Dead Space, but have you guys seen the inventory menu? Does it sort of detract from the experience that way, or is it integrated enough to keep you in the game?
I believe that it did pause when I saw somebody.
I don't know. I think that's actually where that discussion came from. Like, if you go into your inventory, I don't think the action stops. I think I think that's where the pause question came from.
I tell you, it didn't work in Alone in the Dark.
Did anything work in Alone in the Dark, Logan?
No, it really didn't.
But does anybody think Fallout 3 didn't deserve Best of Show? I didn't think so.
Hell no. I'm not coming out against that one.
Yeah, I did hear a lot of complaining online that like the stuff they showed at E3 like focused too much on the shooting aspect of it and not enough on the role playing aspect of it. Which I guess I can understand because it is a, you know, it's like an action role playing game. So they you know, you put them up there and say you've got 5 minutes to show off this game. They're going to show, you know, here's something blowing up, and you know here's stuff you can shoot. But I mean, from what I played, there's, you know, rest assured there's a lot of role playing to be had in there. So well deserved on their part. You can play Fallout 1 and 2 on GameTap, but I guess if you want to buy GameTap itself, you can give Time Warner a call because they've put it up for sale, which is kind of a shock because I was under the impression it was doing pretty well.
You know, it might still be, but they just for some reason want to unload it, you know, I'm hoping.
Yeah, Time Warner is kind of schizophrenic sometimes, and like with the whole AOL purchase, who knows what they're thinking.
Yeah, because I thought it was doing well as well, and it may well be, you know, and just for some reason they want to slim down their portfolio or something. I don't know, yeah. But that would be awful if it went down because it's a great service,
and it's especially because you know they have such broad resources to advertise it with. You know, on the Cartoon Network, it owns a few magazines, and I think they have some billboard outdoor advertisement. So it is kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
now, we do have good old games coming up in the very near future, which is I think it's got a leg up on GameTap because you actually own the games that you buy on the service, you know, with no DRM.
Right. One thing that always bugged me about GameTap is that if you download an old game off of there that has a bunch of mods out there for it, you can't use those mods because it's kind of packaged in a DRM way that doesn't allow you to add modify it at all.
Yeah. Whereas good old games, which is I believe it's going to open in September, and they've just closed the beta. I think.
I thought they pushed the beta back, but but there's going to be an open beta.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. They've got no classic games, and they're going to be selling them for $5.99 to $9.99, I think.
Yeah, they've got like all the old Interplay stuff on there right now. They've got Fallout 1 and 2 on there as well for like $5 a pop.
And no DRM. No DRM at all. You can download them as many times as you want, and they're yours. You can burn them to CD, back them up, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I'm very much looking forward to that, yeah.
So, oh, that's right. NVIDIA is gearing up to enable PhysX acceleration on their GeForce 8, 9, and 2XO series, which didn't they already do it for the 2 series, Logan?
Yes, yeah.
So their next update, which is coming soon, will enable it for GeForce 8000 and 9000 series owners.
Yeah, all you have to do is download the new drivers.
Yeah, so it'll just be automatic. And I guess there still aren't that many games that take really good advantage of it. But on our disc on – is that the October issue, Logan, that we did that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On our disc on the October issue, we included the Unreal 3 demo – Unreal Tournament 3 demo, along with a mod pack that adds a bunch of PhysX effects to it. So once you get that, you can plug that in and go nuts. And like, there's some more like destructibility in there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm hoping after they release this thing for the 8000 series, maybe 6-9 months after that, when developers are confident that there's this huge install base out there, well, now suddenly it's worth it to begin adding these new PhysX effects into games.
Although
I'm hoping.
It'll be a little longer than that, though, because, I mean, before we see a game where it says on the box, GeForce 8 series required, that's going to be a while. But, this PhysX acceleration can work across ATI cards as well, if they get it ironed out. I guess there's a third-party project in the works trying to get it working.
Yeah.
Do you know if older games like Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter that had AGEA, will that be able to take advantage of the hardware? And does that matter?
Yes, absolutely.
So it'll enhance the physics in that?
Oh, yeah. Any game with PhysX acceleration will work with this.
Yep.
Awesome. I'll have to go back and replay that.
Yeah, I guess there was one level in Ghost Recon 2, or not Ghost Recon 2, but...
Just Gra.
Gra,
yeah.
Was it Gra 1 or Gra 2 that had the bonus level?
Draw two,
yeah. So you can go back and play a bonus level that has a bunch of extra destructible stuff. So Ubisoft says that the Assassin's Creed build of the PC version that leaked out ahead of the retail release was leaked out by the disc duplicators. So they finished the game. They sent it off to duplication so that it can be pressed onto a bunch of DVDs and sent out to retail. And apparently somebody who works at that disc duplicator facility copied the game and put it on the piracy sites. And Ubisoft is suing them now for alleging that copy was downloaded over 700,000 times. So that
frankly, I would suspect that most of pirate, most wares copies come from duplication factories.
I don't know about most of them. I mean, a lot of them probably come out like right after the release, or come.
I should say anything that's released, before their launch date,
right?
Because it's got to come from somewhere, and generally the developers and publishers are pretty good, tight lockdown.
Yeah. Isn't there security. A lot of trouble? Isn't there a lot of trouble with this kind of thing with movies too?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is the problem: is that you can have all kinds of quality control and security inside the software company, but as soon as it goes out to duplication, it kind of becomes like the Wild West.
But this is what's great about...
They should have background checks or something, or people that work at these companies.
It's great that they're going after the duplication factory, because now all the duplication factories are going to go, if we're liable, we're going to start taking a real closer look at our employees and who we're hiring.
Yeah, but you can find out if someone has, drug problems or whatever is part of a background check, whereas a criminal record. But how do you find out if they're just a scumbag, if they're just a software pirate?
Right, you got to check their internet logs and see how much they frequent the Pirate Bay or something.
Maybe you can hire bonded employees, So, no, seriously, it's like people basically who are insured against malfeasance.
I don't know.
They got to do something, because it's right now they're probably the weak link in that chain. And you know what? Ubisoft has a lot to be pissed off about because that the leaked version have a bug.
Right,
that gave the game a reputation for being unstable, and
all those people who pirated it, the buggy version, are going, "Oh, I'm not buying this now."
Yeah, you know,
it's got a bug in it. Right. There's no way I'm pirating the bug-free version when it comes out.
Yeah,
I wonder if the bugginess arose from like somehow hacking around the DRM like sloppily.
Entirely possible, even likely.
Right. But yeah, we hope they nail the bastard because, that's not cool.
It's especially galling because it was such a great game.
Well, that's subjective. I got a little bit bored with it, before I finished.
I love it.
It was cool. I'll give it that. It was definitely cool. Blizzard is now offering fabulous prizes, such as an in-game mount, an exclusive mount that you can only get through this program, free game time, etc. if you refer a friend to and get them hooked into WoW, which
shouldn't be that hard, right?
I'm kind of surprised they've only now started doing that. Incentivizing.
Do you want to know how effective this promotion has been anecdotally?
Yes.
I told my girlfriend about it 5 minutes ago, and she's already signed up her mother so that she can get the mount.
Wow. Oh.
We were talking about this on the Game Theory podcast last week. This is just an example, I think, of how Blizzard is increasingly understanding their audience very, very well. You know, they've been doing these promotions for a while now, sign up a friend and get a free month. But the people that play these games religiously don't really care whether or not they get a free 30 days. They're going to pay anyway. But you offer them something unique, like an in-game item or a mount, which are very highly prized by the super geeks, then they're going to take action. So I think they're probably going to see much higher take-up of people signing up their friends and what have you. Because people, are going to be wanting to ride around on this new zebra mount, because that's what, that's how you pimp yourself out in the World of Warcraft.
Now, how many people do you suppose are just going to create a second account and say, I referred, this other guy who just happens to have my same name, different credit card or whatever,
Well, Blizzard don't care. They're going to get 30, they're basically selling you a mount for $30.
Right.
So, they win either way. If you create a second account, sign up for 30 days or 60 days. It's 30. You get a free month if you sign up for 30 days. But if you sign someone up and they pay for 2 months, then you get the mount. So even if you're not really conning Blizzard. They don't care as long as you play for 60 days. I mean, they would obviously, I think, prefer that it's a legitimate account, a new player, because they're banking on the idea that if someone plays for 60 days, they'll probably pay play for 60 more and 60 more after that, ad infinitum. But even if it is a fake account and you only play for 60 days and then quit out to get the mount, you've basically bought a mount for $30 from Blizzard.
So, guys, how long do you think your girlfriend's mom will play?
Remains to be seen. Well, she has to play for a minimum of 60 days, she'll either play for the 60 days and get bored and not want to play anymore, or she'll get hooked. I guess check in with me in a couple of months and I'll give you an update.
So, do they actually have to have the account be active, or can your girlfriend? Can you just sign up for one of these accounts?
I don't think they're really going to care. How many quests you've done, as long as the credit card clears for 2 months. That's all Blizzard really cares about.
Very true.
And then her mom will be dragging in all her friends to get so she can get them out. Very nicely done.
Yeah, and in fact, I just got a free month. I mean, this is like a chain of stuff.
It's a pyramid.
So my girlfriend actually hasn't played for about 90 days. Because she's, had other things to do. But now she really wants this mount. But in order to invite her mother to play, she has to sign up herself. And so I got a month free by doing this thing where you can go onto the website and do what's called casting a scroll of resurrection. If you invite a friend who is a lapsed player to reactivate their subscription, you get a free month. So I've got a free month. She's now back in the game. And now she's inviting her mother to play for 2 months so she can get a free mount. So this, this just kind of snowballs. When the more you think about how Blizzard approach this kind of stuff, the less surprising it is that they've got nearly 11 million people playing this bloody thing.
Is it up to 11 now?
It's close. It's like 10.8 or something like that right now, I think.
Man. Nice.
And, obviously when Lich King comes out, you'll see a huge jump as a bunch of people come back into the game.
Right. Well, how many of them do you suppose will bail to go play some Star Trek Online when that comes out?
I'm going to check Star Trek Online out. Is it ever coming out?
It has just been re-announced after the debacle at Petroglyph, where it was being developed here in San Francisco over at Petroglyph Studios, who then like imploded like a quantum singularity or whatever. insert techno babble here. so that they imploded. The IP was sold off, or the rights to it were sold off to an undisclosed Bay Area developer, which, you know, everybody pretty much figured out was Cryptic Studios, who did the City of Heroes and City of Villains games, and are currently working on Champions Online as well. But Cryptic has now, I guess last weekend, they came out and said, hey, it's us, we're doing it. They put out a couple of, like, kind of non-showy screenshots. They just show some environments. You can check it out on StarTrekOnline.com. This weekend, this coming weekend, there is a Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, where they are going to be showing off some footage, in-game footage, and presented by none other than Leonard Nimoy. So that's where we'll get our first look at it.
Awesome.
Yeah. I guess what I'm most curious about, other than like the era it's sort of going to be set in, they have a Enterprise E in there, which sort of implies that it's later in the game, next generation. Anyway, I'm most curious about sort of if the gameplay is going to be like an open platform approach, or with like sort of more freedom integrated into it, or if it's really going to be set in these established roles like engineer and, you know, weapons officer or medical officer with the races and the factions. So
it's Star Trek's always been the toughest franchise to turn into a game. Even though it seems like it's got the richest potential, no one's ever really figured out, you know, exactly how to do it. And I think the MMO is, I can't believe I'm going to say this, the final frontier of how to figure out this this franchise.
You should be ashamed of that
game. It's on record.
Typically, the only MMOs I've ever played are the ones where I have some interest in the world. Like, Star Wars Online was the first one that I ever played, Star Wars Galaxies, because I thought, okay, I like Star Wars. The game was crap, but whatever. And then I already knew, I had no interest in EverQuest, but I knew the Warcraft world, so I got sucked into World of Warcraft through knowing the world. And so Star Trek is also another universe that I'm kind of geeky about, so I'll jump into that. I'm looking at these screenshots, though, on StarTrekOnline.com, and there's some spaceships that don't look like they belong in the Star Trek universe at all.
Yeah.
Aren't they? It looks like a big Star Destroyer or something.
If you look at the captions, they're space stations.
Okay, so but they don't look like anything that's ever been in the Star Trek universe before.
Yeah, I mean, that's one problem I have with
the Star Trek. There's a planet here that kind of looks like Zangarmash from Warcraft with the huge toadstools. What's going on there?
That's absolutely what I was thinking. Like, the color palette is just really a little unrealistic.
It looks totally like Zangarmash. It's very strange.
We'll see.
Yeah, that's a problem I have with a lot of Star Trek games, is they feel the need to create their own alien races. Like, there are already so many alien races in Star Trek, and they feel the need to make more. And generally, they suck. So hopefully they won't go too nuts with this. And like, one thing that's, you know, always been pretty distinctive of Star Trek is that almost all the aliens are humanoid. And then, you know, people make a game and say, oh, we can make, you know, we're not constrained by special effects budgets, you know, dressing people up or doing CG, you know, stuff that looks real. You know, we can make all these crazy non-humanoid aliens. Problem is, then it doesn't feel like Star Trek anymore, because, you know, it's
yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment until I see what they're working on. I am cautiously optimistic. You know, I really liked City of Heroes. That was the second or third MMO I ever played. First one was Star Wars Galaxies, because same thing with me, guys. I was big into Star Wars, not big into fantasy stuff. So, but yeah, that game sucked.
I hope they make it a lot like Voyager.
You would.
Logan just knows I hate Voyager, so. And if they just incorporate, you know, some of the stuff from Voyager, like the Intrepid class ship, fine, that's good. If they have people flying around in Delta Flyers all over the place, I will boycott it forever.
Every problem can be solved with nanoprobes.
Yes. they're an instant win button.
Yeah, My shoes feel too tight. Oh, use nanoprobes.
Yeah. No, they need to have in this game. They need to have a just like a nanoprobe button or a techno babble skill, and you just level up your technobabble skill. You just solve problems with. Is your technobabble skill high enough? Then you can solve this problem.
I've actually got a pile of old Star Trek Next Generation scripts here, like production scripts for. I don't remember how I came by them, but I've flipped through them in the past, and it's interesting. They will in the scripts they will actually say. You know, one of the officers will have a line like, "How about if we?" And then in parentheses, it will actually say, "Insert tech here." it's just nice. Something for like one of the tech, because they have, you know, like the tech advisors who know all the made up tech of the Star Trek universe, and it's their job to go into, you know. So the writers will just go, "Oh, how about if we blah 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 blah," and then someone else comes along and fills that in for them.
It's a Mad Lib.
In extreme situations, you just invent something called the Riker maneuver.
But I don't know how else they would really do it besides besides dividing it up into classes based on the you know positions on the bridge, you know, like security and ops and all that stuff. But I have to wonder if they'd be able to, like, you know, it would be a huge undertaking to let people be either, you know, play as either Federation or Klingon or Romulan or anything.
It's so interesting because it's so difficult. It's such a challenge, you know, because, you know, certainly if you want to play as the Federation, which I imagine many people want to do, you know, I mean, it's a huge militaristic chain of command, you know, a chain of command on each ship, and then a chain of command, you know, all the way up to Starfleet command. You can't just jump into a ship as a captain and go, "Oh, I'm going to go over here." You know, you inherently don't have that kind of freedom in at least the Federation part of the Star Trek universe. So unless they're going to do kind of like a, you know, a renegade space trading type game where you can do whatever you want, but that just won't be as interesting. People want to command, you know, the big Federation ships, and so I just don't know how it's going to work.
And that's another question: is everybody going to have their own ship, or are you going to have crews on all together on one ship? You know, it could go either way.
And didn't Star Wars Galaxies? It didn't even have space combat out of the box, did it?
No, not until Jump to Lightspeed came out.
So that's going to be, I mean, that's a pretty big undertaking to have sort of away team missions and space missions potentially out of the box, if that's what they're going to do.
You could kind of imagine a party stroke guild system, like a raid system, you know, where you imagine, you know, in a particular game, like in Warcraft, you know, 25 people have to get together or 10 people have to get together and defeat an enemy. You can put those 10 people in the various positions on the bridge and they've all got a role to play, just like you have a role to play in a dungeon raid. I mean, maybe it could work that way.
Right. Sure. It would have to be like a bunch of like mini games, though. So they'd all have to be like really good mini games to keep you from getting bored. And that's not easy to do either. But we'll have to wait and see next weekend. We'll check in next week and see what Leonard Nimoy shows us. So in the meantime, Gaz, you've been away from Team Fortress 2 for was it 6 months?
Yeah, I've been out of town, away from my gaming box for a long time, and so had gone completely cold turkey on Team Fortress 2, and then, you know, finally I had a little bit of a window of free time opened up, and so I decided to jump back in. And it's been a little bit of a culture shock because, you know, you leave online games are kind of like soap operas, you know, you leave them for 6 months and you come back and you're like, what the hell's happened? You know, everything's changed. Who are these new people? And why does this thing no longer work? And what's going on here? So it took me a little while to kind of relearn the game.
Yeah, so like I guess the big changes since you've been gone were like the upgrades to the pyro and the medic, and
yeah, it was the new maps which I actually really like. I really enjoy the payload type maps.
Yeah,
Gold Rush is really fun. And the medic and the pyro achievements are interesting. I mean I don't like to play medic. It's a really difficult class to play, and you get a lot of shit when you try to play medic if you don't play it right. You know, it's like being a healer class in any game. You know, you get a ton of people constantly wanting to be healing them, and if you don't do it exactly right, you get a ton of shit. So it's really not worth the aggravation. I think it's the most difficult class to play after Spy, and the most thankless class as well. So I haven't really bothered to get the medic achievements or, you know, get the other medic weapons because I'm just not going to use them. But I did get all the pyro weapons. And of course, typically, I went and got all the pyro weapons right before they decided to nerf them.
Yes.
How long did it take you to get it all?
Well, I have to admit, I cheated a little bit. I went to one of those achievement farms where I kind of hate myself a little bit for doing it, but it's what everybody does.
Dude, everybody does it. Yeah.
I hate to be hypocritical about this because I did it myself, but I just think it's kind of defeats the object of having achievements if you can just go sit in a room and basically collect all the achievements really, really easily. But, you know, people create these achievement farm maps which have special rooms with, you know, kind of respawnable bots where you can just, you know, they're designed to enable you to get all the achievements as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So I went around and got all the achievements pretty quickly. It took me about a day to get all the achievements, when usually it would take weeks and weeks to collect them all. And then once you've got all the milestones, you can go get the weapons. And some of the new pyro weapons are great. I love the flare gun, where you can set people alight from, you know, far distances. And then my favorite thing has been this new flamethrower, the Backburner, which gives 100% critical hits from behind, which really, I think, is a really smart... It says a lot about how Valve are smart about game design, I think, because, you know, they're not just going to give you a weapon that's better. They're going to give it to you in a way that's better, in such a way that encourages you to play the class the way it's meant to be played. You know, pyros have always been harasser, ambusher classes. And if you encourage the player to attack from behind, then, you know, that I think encourages you to play the pyro in the correct way. So it's great to get those crits from behind. But what was particularly annoying was when they first introduced that new flamethrower, you also got a 50% health boost from using it. And they decided that was a little overpowered the pyros a little too much. So just after I got excited about having the extra health, because I had won a lot of battles with less than 50 health remaining, you know, basically the difference between being alive and being dead. And then he decided it was too much. And they stuck it right at the bottom of the patch notes, too. What a bunch of bastards, you know. Like, all the kind of trivial patch notes were like, fixed a minor bug here and fixed this here. And then all the way at the bottom of the list, oh, by the way, we screwed the pyros. And I guess they hoped that people wouldn't notice that, but I certainly did.
So why do you suppose, just quickly, why do you suppose they don't turn off achievements on, like, servers using unofficial maps? Seems like that.
I think they should. If I was in charge of Valve, I would do that. I would find a way to encourage people. I mean, it's a level playing field now because anyone can go to an achievement farm. But it, like I said, it's just kind of pointless. You know, it doesn't feel like an achievement if you're just sitting there shooting a flamethrower into an endless stream of respawning, you know, heavy bots. But you know, people want the weapons and they want them as quickly as possible. So they're gonna, you know, they're gonna do it the fastest way they can.
For sure. I mean, and it'd really probably be in their interest to do that because Valve is into such, you know, data monitoring and getting data from their maps that if they had turned off achievements, they'd be able to sort of measure damage dealt and all that player activity maybe a little bit more realistically. And for me, like, I stayed away from those maps because I'm so protective of my stats. Like, I wouldn't want them to get tainted like that, but...
Oh, actually, that's a good point. That's one thing that I didn't take into account until after I'd done it. My stats are all thrown off now. I look at my stats, and you know, my most kills as a pyro in one life is like 1,352.
Oh my god!
Because I kill things endlessly in achievement farm, and so now I'll never know what my real best stats are. I guess unless I reset my stats, so that kind of sucks. But I still don't think that's enough of a penalty. I think they should be discouraging people from, you know, from doing it altogether.
Sure. And actually, the other recent news on TF2 was the new map that they sort of teased, the new environment on teamfortress.com. It's really just a small amount of information, but you sort of get the idea. It's a tall missile silo. It looks very vertical from the concept art they have listed there. But they sort of have a shot with a missile sort of submerged in the silo.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it now. It looks cool.
And they have one coming out of it. So it sort of implies that same kind of objective-based map, possibly. I'm speculating here. It would sort of be consistent with Gold Rush, where you're pushing this weapon up to a point. Maybe you're inside the silo, or you're on top of it, and you're activating something to make the missile come out, and that's how you win. So it looks really interesting. So hopefully it'll be good.
What I really like about what Valve is doing with Team Fortress is how they're treating it almost like an MMO. They didn't just put the game out and they're letting it sit there. You know, aside from doing new maps, they are working their way through the classes, giving all the classes their own achievement packs and their own new weapons. So the game's going to continue to evolve and become more interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too. At first, when the game first came out, and it felt so balanced, and they kept balancing, rebalancing, rebalancing. But then when they started announcing that they were going to have unlockable weapons, that just gave me a headache even trying to think about balancing. And so it must be incredibly challenging for them to get all that right.
It's hugely challenging. Like, it's easy to look at what they've done and say that's cool. Like, you know, we like the new medic, we like the new medic stuff, we like the new pyro stuff. But, you know, okay, so for example, we know, or at least we suspect, that the heavy class is the next one. Mm-hmm. That's going to get an update. And so the question is, like, what do you do? What do you do to the heavy to make him more interesting and make the players want those weapons without unbalancing him? And this is a problem that's been an issue with MMOs for a long time. You know, Blizzard do this same thing. They don't, when they update classes, they don't update them wholesale. They'll say, like, okay, well, In this quarter, you know, the Rogue's going to get, you know, an update, and whether that, you know, we're going to make some things better and some things worse. And so, you know, you go to all this effort to intricately construct a game that's so well balanced. And so you have to be very, very careful anytime you make a change to a specific class. Even a small change could completely unbalance the game.
Mm. Absolutely. And that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, because it's incremental, their updates, the end user gets a different experience, you know, in November than they do in June or January. I mean, it's just a different experience throughout, and it makes it a little bit more dynamic. Whereas, I mean, I used to play the original Team Fortress a whole lot, like in clans and whatnot. And, you know, you go on 2-4 and you just knew what to expect every single time. You knew where the sentries were going to be. You knew where the snipers were going to be, what they're going to have. And just sort of having things a little bit more dynamic where people have different weapons, different capabilities. It keeps it fresh. It's a good approach.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. That's also a really good point. I think that by changing the abilities and making those tweaks, it forces players to, you know, for example, like a tried and true tactic, like you say, like putting a sentry in a certain position or whatever, may not now work anymore because of, you know, a new ability to counter that particular tactic. So it forces players to, again, to kind of keep learning and relearning the game. The only other negative thing that's come out of it, I know this is something that we saw a lot with Pyros, with the medic updates. It's not like everyone was clamoring to play medic because of the updates, but everybody suddenly wanted to play Pyro. It's not like an MMO where you know, Blizzard suddenly make the rogues a lot more interesting. You know, you can't just jump in and play a rogue. You have to level that character. But in Team Fortress 2, you can jump in on the fly and decide that, you know, today you're going to play Pyro. So suddenly everybody was playing Pyro because that was the new sexy class with the interesting new weapons. And I know a lot of servers, including, you know, PC Gamer's own Team Fortress server, has had to include a Pyro cap now to stop from, you know, stop the game becoming too Pyro-centric. And that's probably going to happen each time a new class gets updated. When the new heavy weapons come in, I'm sure you're going to see a bunch of heavies running around maps.
Yep. So, Gaz, you had some ideas of what you'd do if you were in charge of Valve. Well, if you want to make them an offer, they'll listen. Because Doug Lombardi was on Gamma Sutra giving an interview about just, you know, Valve's general state in the industry and how they see themselves, and they say they're doing great, but yeah, they're open to you know, suggestions, they're open to offers. Like if somebody wants to back up the money track, I imagine it would have to be a lot of money. Otherwise, EA probably would have already bought them.
I think we've speculated about this before, haven't we? Like if you were going to buy Valve, how much would it cost you? I mean, obviously it would be in the billions, but to put a specific number on it would be very difficult. I'm actually surprised to hear Doug say this at all. I've always thought of Valve as a company that very much values its independence. They've always seemed one of the most fiercely independent developers out there, and they don't like the idea of anyone, you know, being able to tell them what to do. I'm sure they've resisted all numbers of buyout offers in the past, and obviously they make plenty of money, or at least we assume they do, from Steam and Orange Box. I mean, it seems to be a very successful company financially, so I don't know why they would entertain this. What would they get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're just waiting for an offer they can't refuse. I mean, you know, why even
bring it up? You know, if they were asked,
he was asked. You know, it's like, you know, would you ever consider selling? And he said, well, you know, we're very happy with the way things are going right now, but you know, we're not going to shut people down if they offer. Yeah. So, or that they're not going to just, you know, slam the door in their face. They'll talk about it.
Yeah, especially if it's one of those offers that just instantly makes everyone at the company extremely rich. I mean, those kind of things are hard to
do. I like those.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for that offer myself. I won't slam the door in your face if you make me that offer.
I wonder if I should go public.
What would you get? Yeah, what would you start your shares at?
Like a billion. Hmm. Logan Co?
Loco?
Yeah, Loco.
You have to be
I didn't realize how good that was until just now.
That was awesome. Because remember, people, I am a rock legend.
Yes.
You can include the exclusive rights to Cat Fantastic as part of that deal. Cat Fantastic video game, board games, TV show.
Oh, the merch alone, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Boxes. That alone is worth a fortune.
Okay, so we've got a few more stories here, but we'll go through them really quick because we're running low on time. We've got a release date for Warhammer Online, September 18th. Does anyone have any launch predictions there? Is that going to go smoothly?
Ugh, MMOs? Really?
It's EA-backed, you know.
True.
Yeah.
So one would assume they'll have, you know, enough servers, although EA-backed Hellgate as well, and that launch wasn't all that smooth. Although,
this is the thing, didn't you feel like we got a little bit of... MMO fatigue at this point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, Age of Conan
just
dropped.
I very much detected that in your voice there. You were kind of like, oh, really, another one?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're not all MMOs. In fact, there's one less now because Fury, that was developed by Auron, who I believe closed up shop not too long ago, like a few months back. But Fury just shut down their servers. It was kind of a combat-based MMO. So there are very few that actually just closed down entirely. But
what do you think is that we're getting less and less excited about these new MMOs as they're coming out? Is it because it's unlike a regular game where you can just jump in and do whatever you want? You know that game's going to require a lot more of you.
Enormous commitment.
I mean, not only just time. People are only capable of so much emotional investment in so many games, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, this is why I think the MMO, the whole world of MMOs economically is really, really weird, because there's only so many players to go around. You know, I can play, you know, a regular single player game or a regular multiplayer game, I can play a new one every week and jump around, and it's very casual. But you know, if I've already got an MMO that I enjoy, say World of Warcraft or whatever else, it's very, very difficult to get me to take on another one. You're basically going to have to pull me away from all my loyalty and time invested in the old game and into the new one. And that's why I think new MMOs are so risky.
Yeah, and it's got to be really something really remarkable for anybody who's been into MMOs to get excited about it, because they'd have to leave what they started.
This is why the Star Trek one is the only one that's really got my attention, because I already have a bit of an investment in the whole Star Trek world.
Yes.
So that it doesn't take a lot to get me into an MMO like that. But anything else, I don't. You know, I I don't feel like I have this need for that. You know, for a new world, and a game that has that requires that much commitment to and really enjoy.
Well, you know, Logan, the CEO of EA a couple weeks ago did confirm the KOTOR MMO. So there could be another one that will be. But we'll wait until we hear something, you know, about what's going on with that game. A couple other quick stories. Microsoft has patched out the CD check on Halo 1 for the PC. Why don't they just make that game free? They should just put it in the Windows Vista Ultimates.
Yeah, right.
So Microsoft has patched out the CD check in Halo, like Halo 1 Combat Evolved. So you know, you can just install it and play. Why don't they just make that game free and put it in like the Windows Vista Ultimate downloads at the very end? You know, because they desperately need something in there. I've had Ultimate for you know, since it came out, and there's like nothing. There's a free solitaire game. Thanks a lot.
Dream Scene. Ooh.
Yeah. Although they did fix Dream Scene to the point where it's not crashing every 5 minutes anymore. I'm using it right now.
Ooh, there's a value add.
I'm not thrilled about it, but I'm only using it to see if it would.
That's
crash.
A great idea, because I mean, why not? You know, it's like there's. It's not like it's selling gangbusters anymore.
But that's the point. What is the point almost of going to all the effort to patching a game that probably no one is even playing anymore?
Yeah,
I know. Apparently, it did sell pretty well for them, according to some metric somewhere. It may have even have been the GDP numbers or NDP. Sorry, what were the numbers again? NDP. NDP numbers. According to that, I think
NPD.
I think it's one of the best, like, best-selling PC shooters of all time, because they'd only track certain things. So,
Has there been any news of is Halo 3 coming to PC? Did they ever announce anything there?
There was like one like hint that it might be coming, like the Microsoft flub somewhere that you know.
Hold on, let me check PC Gamer Malaysia.
It's been
It's coming
it's
in 2012.
You'd think something would be coming by now.
Well, as a rule of thumb, just imagine how long it will be from now before you don't care anymore, and that's probably right around the window when they'll release it.
Right.
This is another example of where I think Microsoft is really, really failing to capitalize on all the goodwill it gets from its Xbox division and parlaying it into the PC. We've already seen what a screw-up Games for Windows Live has been, and how it's nowhere near as good as Xbox Live. And you know, they have you know, such a great franchise in Halo. Halo 3 was a really awesome game. Why can't they be like more like Rockstar and at least have a new version, a PC version out, you know, something like 6 months? Why do we have to wait years, after which point it just feels like a, you know, old news?
Because we've asked them about that, and they keep saying, oh, you know, the Xbox needs its distinctive franchise. Which, you know, that's fair enough. You know, you can have your exclusive franchise on the Xbox, but how about this, Microsoft? Make one for the PC, too. You know?
Yeah.
But,
They don't own Bungie.
But I mean,
I
can understand why they wouldn't want to release, you know, two versions, you know, too close to each other. But years is just ridiculous. I mean, do they really not believe that a 6-month gap between an Xbox 360 version and a PC version will be enough to protect the Xbox 360? Five million people bought the Xbox 360 version of Halo 3. Do they really think that if, you know, the PC version came 6 months after that, it would have affected that somehow? Nonsense.
It's insulting, and it's policies that they're coming up with people that don't, you know, buy games. So
it is insulting, especially when you're talking about a particular genre. I can understand if it was like, you know, a fighting game or something that you feel like doesn't really belong on PC. But it's an FPS. It's the genre that was invented on PC. You know, bring it over.
Right.
I think they really are worried that too many people will sort of migrate over to the PC version, and then but they're afraid that it is. You know, it's the kind of guys
that are their bread and butter on 360. You know, like kind of the early 20, the college age stoners that sit around on their couch with their buddies, talking shit and playing the Halo. None of those guys are going to go out and buy like a $2,000 or $3,000 gaming rig and sit at home in front of their, you know, in front of their monitor. Those guys like their experience to be a certain way. I don't think they would have to worry about cannibalizing that market at all.
And heaven forfend, they cannibalize themselves and get the sale anyway. You know, it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, they're leaving money on the table.
Yeah, yeah, they're like a bunch of PC gamers out there that don't own an Xbox or don't like playing shooters on the Xbox that would buy it too. So it's weird, but they've got their weird little mindset. Let them have it. So the other little bits that I wanted to cover were the Red Alert 3 multiplayer beta has started up over at File Planet. I guess they're handing out a few keys over there if you're a subscriber. They've also this is kind of interesting. Sierra, after the big Activision Blizzard merger, they are now kind of offloading some of those Sierra studios, like Massive, the guys who did World in Conflict, and they still have this Soviet Assault expansion coming out, and I guess it's a 360 game too. They're I guess not going to publish it. Sierra isn't, so they may sell it off, but right now they have no plans to publish it, which is ridiculous.
I want to mention something about Sierra. This is actually something that we talked about on Game Theory earlier this week, but no one listens to that podcast, so I want to say it in front of
guys, actually, for the record, I listen to I still listen to Game Theory, guys. So
oh, you're the one. Okay,
yeah, there you go.
We were talking. Edge Online this week did run an opinion piece about Sierra and what has it become, and they had quotes from, you know, Ken Williams who created Sierra, and Al Lowe who did the Legendary Larry games, basically saying, what the hell has Sierra become? You know, it's Sierra in name only. It's kind of become like the new Atari, where, you know, the brand doesn't really stand for anything anymore. It just kind of soldiers on. You know, Sierra used to mean something about the kind of games and the kind of players that liked those games, and now it's just a picture of a mountain with the word Sierra under it that they put some games out on. I think it's kind of sad when storied old, you know, brands like this are kind of left to die slowly with no particular identity anymore.
Well, I think the death will come sooner rather than later now. I think I think they're probably planning on axing the Sierra brand. Just because, I mean, why would they start, you know, nixing some of these games? I like that there's questions now about whether, like, Ghostbusters and Prototype will be released under Sierra.
This is the weird thing, is that this is the other thing I didn't understand about what Vivendi Activision has done, is they let go two really interesting franchises, the Ghostbusters franchise and the Bourne franchise, both now homeless. And I was like, but you've held on to Sierra? Like, if you're having a yard sale and there's like the Bourne identity franchise and the Ghostbusters franchise and the Sierra brand, you know, sitting on a table, like, yeah, I think I know which one I would rather buy.
Right. Yeah, it's a little weird.
They jettison these apparently completely viable franchises. Well, I just don't understand what's the conversation that takes place where they go, okay, yeah, this fits into the criteria of what this should be a Sierra game, because I don't think anybody even knows what that means anymore.
Absolutely not. Anyway, let's take a few questions because we're running out of time here.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Wraith from Rammstein Air Base, Germany. I was listening to one of your older podcasts, and you mentioned the Novin Falcon. My wife was wondering what it was, so I did a Google image search for it, and this led to the unfortunate discovery that someone's turned one into a force feedback sex toy. I myself decided to avoid buying the Nova and Falcon and instead went with Logan's suggestion and got the Sidewinder, which has to be my favorite mouse to date, and it doesn't lead a double life hanging around sleazy street corners and turning tricks for interface upgrades. Anyways, on to my question. Numerous people have been saying that E3 is on its last legs and that it lacks the allure of the previous shows. Here in Germany, and I'm sure Kristen knows this, the Leipzig Gaming Convention is everything E3 was and, of all things, open to the public. Their attendance has been growing immensely since E3 was remodeled, and I was wondering if you think that E3 would benefit more from the type of show that Leipzig puts on rather than the rather bland new E3. Other than that, great podcast and great work with the magazine. Take care.
Well, yeah. One thing is that a show open to the public is not necessarily that helpful for journalists.
Yeah, Kristen's talked about this a few times. Like, she thinks that the Leipzig model is excellent, just that they have like a few days where it's closed for journalists, and then it opens up to the public. So yeah. it's like a hybrid show that would work great for everybody. And if E3 adopts that model, great. We'd be all for that.
Isn't, no one ever talks about it, but it's become more and more successful in recent years. Isn't Penny Arcade Expo exactly what this is?
I was just going to bring that up. I think PAX is coming up really soon, and it sounds it's like a gamer-centric just like
become
festival.
A huge thing.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It's like the size that E3 used to be now, and it that is the weekend of the 29th. That's coming up.
Okay. I just pulled up the Novan Falcon sex toy. Unsee.
You've seen it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Let me put that on my thing. Let's list of things not to Google.
Every shade of wrong.
But anyway. But good for him that he went for the Sidewinder mouse. I'm using one right now. I like it a lot.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast crew. This is Abominator from Austin, Texas. Due to all of Logan's cooking comments on the podcast, I was thinking that you should start up your own cooking segment of the PC Gamer Podcast. Here's how I imagine it.
Having a flashback.
Hello, gamers. Today we're going to be talking about cooking. So get off your lazy asses, stop poop-socking, and let's go down to the kitchen. Now, the kitchen's probably the least used room in your house, considering that you really just heat things up in the microwave. So we're going to explore some wonderful things in there. There's one other device you may use in your kitchen called the refrigerator, and this should keep all your Red Bulls in it. So let's go over to the refrigerator and grab a Red Bull. Okay. Now go over to something called the freezer and grab something called ice cream, which is probably another invention you've explored before in your gaming escapades. Okay, so grab that.
Do you think this guy's on unemployment?
Red Bull float. This thing will keep you up for many hours in the middle of the night. It'll give you a sugar rush and a caffeine
rush.
He's on
genius employment.
So what you do is you grab a glass and you grab your Red Bull. Pour about half the Red Bull into the glass, and then add about 2 to 3 scoops of ice cream. Then you pour slowly the rest of the Red Bull in until it reaches the top of the glass.
Too much time on your hands.
This will be guaranteed to keep you up for hours of playing TF2.
And fade to black.
So, enjoy.
It's only 15 more seconds.
Garnish with Altoids.
Oh, we'll take that suggestion under advisement.
As the newest editor, Evan will be trying that, and we will check in again with everyone next week.
There's actually already a very good geek cooking show online. It's called Pro at Cooking.
Yeah, Cooking with Dave.
It's Dave from Pure Ownage has his own geeky cooking show.
I highly recommend
it. It's quite geeky, but the difference is, unlike what we just heard, he actually does have real recipes, and you will...
And he is pro at cooking, as they...
He's pro at cooking.
As advertised.
I love how dry he is.
He acts like a total ass the whole time. It's great.
Yeah, never seems to be impressed or amused by anything. But the I saw the first episode. The first thing that he cooked, God, what was it? I can't remember exactly what it was. I'm looking at the website right now.
I don't remember.
It was a seafood stir fry, and it was actually quite good.
I think Jeremy had tried that. He wasn't that big a fan of it, actually.
Well, he actually made the recipe.
Yeah, he did.
Well, according to this, he's got 4 episodes so far.
Oh, there's a new episode, so, yeah.
Kicking Alfredo pasta, a pimpin' pizza, and a mouthwatering chili. So, there's all tastes are catered for, it would seem.
And in the Alfredo episode, he actually rolls his own noodles.
Yeah, that's hardcore. That's how they cook the real cooking shows. You know, they make their own pasta.
The broiled Fig Newton's got a tremendous reception, I must say. I got a lot of emails on that one.
So do we have one more question that is about a game?
Hello, PC Gamer podcasters. My name is Itamar, and I'm a co-host in Hamischakia, the Hebrew gaming podcast. Let me just state my appreciation for your podcast, which is usually excellent. Great work on both the technical and content side, people.
Usually.
I've got a little question for you guys. Your magazine is called PC Gamer. Don't you think this name is a bit of a misnomer? I'll explain why. PCs can run Linux. Linux games are not covered in the magazine. PCs might also run BSD or OS2, but such games that exist for them are ignored. The Amiga was a PC. Heck, the Mac can even be considered a personal computer. And yet, PCG covers none of this. Maybe this magazine should be called Windows Gamer. Once upon a time, it had covered MS-DOS games, so perhaps Microsoft Gamer is more accurate. Is the name just a holdover from ancient times? This is not an attack against the magazine. I'm just deliberating. Anyway, thanks for your time, guys, and bye-bye.
Well, this is clearly an attack against the magazine.
Clearly.
No.
Clearly, that's what PC Gamer has been missing all along, is more coverage of the burgeoning Amiga games market.
Anybody want to take this one?
As someone who was actually around in those ancient times.
Old days of PCG, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember reviewing games on a bloody EGA. 386 machine. I mean, everyone knows that, yeah, of course, a Mac is a personal computer in that it is a computing device and it is for your personal use. But no one's confused about the difference between a Mac and a PC and, you know, other quote-unquote personal computers. I think this guy is just getting caught up in semantics.
Yeah, it is a semantic argument. And I mean, just the when you say a PC, people know you're talking about a Windows PC. And Linux, yes, the market share is growing, but there are very few games for it, especially that aren't on Windows as well. So there's not really a point in reviewing both versions. So, you know, may as well just stick with the platform that has the most games.
And actually, someone just got Windows to run through Linux on a PS3, so the same argument there.
I saw that post on Engadget where it took what, half an hour to boot and like 12 minutes to launch Notepad?
Wow.
Like, why would you bother? I understand.
When they release Halo for Linux in 2040, we will definitely give a shout out to that one.
Yeah, can anyone think of any game that's out on Linux that isn't out on the PC? I mean,
that is an interesting question, though. Do you guys do any coverage of Linux? I mean, you know, there are Linux gamers out there, and people are interested in Linux. Do you? I mean, you are de facto a Windows gaming magazine, right? I bet you don't have a single machine at the PC Gamer office that runs Linux.
No.
I mean, one at home, but.
I think it would be kind of pointless just because our audience, like, you know, the people that have been subscribing to PC Gamer for years are not Linux, you know, they're not running Linux.
Yeah, so. Honestly, if people were if we heard a lot from people like, hey, Linux this and Linux that, you know, we would pay more attention to it. But really, this is the first time I've heard anyone go, hey, I'd really like to see you cover games under different operating systems, you know?
What difference does it make?
Not much. I mean, it's the same game generally. I mean, yeah. Command & Conquer came out for the Mac. CNC3 came out for the Mac, but it's the same game as it is on the PC. So, you know, we're just reviewing the game generally.
The only application I've ever really heard of for Linux and gaming is I know a lot of people like to run servers on Linux boxes. You know, Counter-Strike and Team Fortress, often, you know, dedicated servers run on Linux boxes. But yeah, what's the point? I always thought Linux people are a bit weird anyway.
I see the appeal. I've always like Linux is one of those things that's always been on. Like, oh, I should try that out. Yeah, I've got old PCs.
Come on board, get with the winning team. Yeah. The war's been fought and won. What are you still doing over there?
Hey, it is free. You got to give them that.
It is free, but you get what you pay for, don't you?
No, it's supposedly getting pretty good. I mean, I haven't used it. I'm just working.
I mean, if you're gonna buy a pre-made computer, I guess Linux people would never do that. Linux people are gonna, you know, build their own machine and put Linux on it for free. But if you are like, I presume the majority of people that have a PC at home for gaming, if they're just going to buy a pre-made PC, then you're basically getting Windows for free, or at least included in the price of the machine anyway.
Yeah, although there are a group of people that will, you know, the Linux crowd will like buy a PC and then raise a stink and like get like $100 back off the price of the PC because they don't want the Windows, they can send it back. So
I do have a Linux machine, but I don't use it for gaming. I use it for writing and for some other audio stuff, just because it's more stable, and I don't have to worry about viruses, which is nice. But for gaming, you know, I go where the games are.
Right. So yeah, we're gonna stick with Windows if that's all right.
Yeah.
What was that?
Anyway. Yeah.
Don't do that.
I liked it.
Maybe,
it's
maybe you could call yourself Games for Windows Magazine. I hear that's available.
Oh,
they still use the brand though for their online stuff,
yeah,
and their podcast. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Anyway, let's go on to playlists. We got running short on time. So, Logan, what you playing?
You know what I started playing was, I don't know why, I just picked it up. It happened to be there, was Jericho, which we didn't, you know, rate all that highly, but I'm actually enjoying it. It's a nice, gushy, gory game, and I love, you know, Viscera. I just love it, you know? I love, you know, the fact that you're running around, and just after you blow up this big turret, type thing, one of the bodies just grabs your ankle and he's like, I think it's fantastic. I like it.
Well, what? How would you score it, Logan?
Well, you know, but I'm only about probably about 15-20% in, so I think it's kind of a little premature right now. The controls are not as good as they were on the Xbox. Yes, I did play the Xbox version. But, you know, but I'm still getting used to it, so I wouldn't want to lay down a score just yet. Yeah. I'll let you know next week.
Well, for reference, Chuck reviewed it when it came out for the PC, and he gave it a 57, which on our scale is, well, that's a high average.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, it's not a bad experience, but it's kind of a blah, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's disappointing when Undying, the Clive Barker's previous game, was so great.
Right. But Evan, what are you playing?
Well, my main course continues to be Team Fortress 2, but I guess I'm finding some good side dishes in Puzzle Quest and Peggle. So, yep.
Just don't get Logan started on Peggle again. He'll never play anything for like
Peggle.
I mean, it's only need a new one, isn't it time?
Oh, yes. It's right around the corner. And we're playing it. Yeah.
Andy, what are you playing?
I haven't played it. There you go. Keep it short.
All right. And Gaz?
I've been playing, you know, Team Fortress 2, obviously. It's really the only thing I've been playing on the PC recently. It just never gets old. More than I think any other shooter I've ever played, it's just constantly interesting. So I've been playing a lot of that. I've been playing My Weight Loss Coach on the DS. It comes with a little pedometer that tracks your steps. And
they seriously have a pedometer? Pedometer?
Yeah, what it is it comes
in
a, awesome. there's a little gadget that plugs into the Game Boy cartridge port of the DS, and you know, you take it out and you strap it to your belt and it records all your steps, and when you get home you plug it into the DS and it uploads that data into the DS, and the DS knows how much exercise you've been doing. And
nice.
It's good, you know, it comes with a little, it's a little bit disconcerting. It's kind of like when you first step on the Wii Fit balance board, you know, you move the little sliders to put your weight in, and the little stick figure guy who's like your coach character, like the little avatar, goes as his belly gets fatter and fatter, and he's stepping on the scale and he's kind of jiggling his belly fat, and you go, oh, I've still got a few more pounds to go before I'm done here. And it does, you know, it's one of the many ways in which the game encourages you. So I mean, it's not really a game, but it's it's good that things like this exist. I think the DS is becoming increasingly good at non-gaming but still kind of fun and useful applications. And I'm tinkering a little bit, I mean just a tiny, teeny, tiny amount with Warcraft. I've been thinking about trying to get back into a guild. I haven't played in months, but I've been trying to figure out, should I get back into a guild, because I want to be ready for when Wrath of the Lich King comes out. But I've kind of changed my plans. My original plan had been, oh, I need to kind of get back into a guild and like get some gear ready to go so that when Lich King comes out, I'll be all set. But the whole point is that actually a lot of people aren't bothering to play right now, because once Lich King comes out with all its new gear from 70 to 80, all your high-end gear is going to become redundant instantly. You know, all your high-end purples will just be replaced by mid-range greens. And so I'm kind of sitting out. I'm thinking about maybe starting a guild of my own. I've got some ideas in that area. And, you know, I get to be the guild boss. I think that's something that would suit me, my leadership.
Power.
I am ready to lead.
he is a celebrity, but is he ready to lead?
Yes, exactly. I'm an internet celebrity, and I am ready to lead. So I'm thinking about starting a guild with a couple of friends. You know, just to kind of play casually. As I said before, you know, I was in one of those high end raiding guilds, one of those very, very competitive guilds. You know, they always wanted to be the first guild on the server to kill, you know, the new boss or whatever. But it really wound up becoming more like having a second job. You know, you would finish your work at the end of the day, whatever it is that you did, and then, you know, you'd turn on your computer and you'd get shouted at by the raid boss, you know, by the guild officers for not being on time for the raid or having collected enough of a particular potion or whatever. It was like, this is becoming like having a second job, and it just isn't fun anymore. And I think that's why a lot of these high-end guilds implode eventually, just under the weight of their own stress and their own, you know, political drama.
They keep cutting more dots.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm gonna start a new guild, but I'm gonna try and keep it, you know, just to kind of friends and people that I know, and have it be casual and not take it too seriously. So that's kind of my plan for when Lich King comes out. But until then, I'm probably just gonna continue to tinker around with Team Fortress. As I said, I love the way that they're keeping that fresh by, you know, just the incremental class changes. And, you know, probably 2 years from now, we're still gonna be talking about what new things are happening with Team Fortress. Games is going to continue to grow.
Well, we're glad to have you back playing PC games and not, you know, buried in Japanese manga.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Hopefully, I mean, this is I think the first time I've been on the PC Gamer podcast in about 6 months.
Yeah, it's
been
crazy.
Way too
holy,
long.
Holy.
So yeah, I'm going to try to get back into a semi regular habit of appearing.
Yeah,
the microphone is always open to you.
Yeah, aww. when you said you were going to be gone for a little while, we were thinking like a month or two.
That's what I thought.
Man, is he ever coming back?
I thought that too. I had no idea the job that I was doing ended up dragging on and being a lot more demanding of my time than I expected. But fortunately, that's kind of behind me for the time being now. And I've got a little bit more free time than I have had, so I can do a podcast now and again.
Until the next ridiculous project kicks in.
Until the next ridiculous project comes along.
We'll just sit around and hope for the next a new writer's strike that'll get you back here.
Yeah.
So let's see. I've been playing. Well, I was on vacation all last week, so I didn't play anything then. But I did. I came back and I've been working on a review for the Civilization IV: Colonization, which, you know, is very retro, but a lot of fun. I keep getting my butt handed to me by natives when I just get too involved in the economic side of it and forget to arm myself. You know, defend myself. So, because I have pretty much a strict no kill policy on the natives, because, you know, I'm very PC like that. And, you know, they're more valuable as trading partners. So, and yeah, that's pretty much all I've had time to play. I haven't even gotten back into Spore yet, which I've got to get in there and get my impressions for Kristen's working on the review for that. So,
do you think Spore is going to have the same kind of mass appeal that The Sims had?
I doubt it. I don't think it's going to be as kind of universal. The appeal is going to be as universal as kind of playing house. You know, it's harder to identify with. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't think it's going to be the next Sims, really.
Yeah, this is what I think, and I think that, you know, if you listen to some of the comments that have been coming out of EA from Riccatello recently, it sounds like that they've got Sims scale plans for it, you know, with microtransactions and setting up almost kind of a whole kind of Spore sub brand within EA, the way that they have with the scene of the Sims is kind of basically its own part of EA now. It's so huge. But, you know, I understand, I think, why the Sims was so successful, because everybody got it. You know, you were kind of living, a kind of a mirror of your own life inside the game, and everybody could understand that. But the idea of creating kind of fantastical creatures from the molecular level and building these bizarre, fantastic civilizations, I don't know if it's going to connect with people on the same mass level. I mean, I think it's going to be very successful. I just don't think it's going to be what EA think it's going to be.
Yeah, I think they are also kind of trying to back away from the hype a little bit. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they're kind of they've said a few things indicating, you know, well, you know, we're going to back off a little bit and just let the game come out, let people play it, and see what they think. They don't want people to think it's the second coming.
On the other hand, if it's 10% as successful as The Sims, it's huge, it's
cash cow already. So,
you know,
I'm sure it's going to be very successful for them. Yeah. For them, but I just kind of doubt it's going to rival The Sims with their 100 million unit sold thing. That's just ridiculous. That's an unfair standard to compare it to. So let's see. That'll about do it for us. We do have some pimping to do. First of all, Showdown, which is going to be in Worcester, Massachusetts, on September 5th through 7th. We have an announcement to make on that. Everybody who shows up, or everybody who buys their way in anyway, I guess you can show up and check it out for free. But everybody who purchases a ticket will get a free copy of Far Cry 2.
No way.
Way.
Oh my God! I played that at E3. Oh, amazing!
That's pretty impressive. How much is a ticket?
It's only like $40 if you buy it before July 31st. Oh, I guess it's over now.
Wow!
No, they extended it. They extended it.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, I actually haven't been following that closely because I've been on vacation. But yeah, so you know, it pretty much covers the price of admission right there. So how
in fact,
can you
we're
say
paying
no?
you to play Far Cry 2?
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something. After the first one, you couldn't pay me to play Far Cry 2.
What? Really?
Oh man, you got so much hate for that, huh?
You know what? You know I'm out there on the crazy fringes here. I didn't like Far Cry. I didn't like Crysis. Let's you know that's just the way it is.
Fair enough.
That's right. I remember your craziness now.
My opinion may change when the Uwe Boll movie finally comes out. I was looking at some new images from that today. It looks like it's going to be a winner.
I think he was bitten by the Montauk monster.
The what?
The Montauk monster.
Do you not see that thing that washed up in that crazy creature
well,
that
this,
washed
this
up in the
beach? This is a little activity that everyone can do after they finish listening to the podcast. Montauk Monster, MONTAUK. Check it out. It's the future. It's going to take over.
Well, yeah, so check out showdownland.com. Also, while you're at it, go to PCGamerTop100.com. Which is something our brethren in the UK are running. They're picking top 100 games. You can go and you can vote and enter to win a free PC with a quad core CPU and Radeon HD 4870, which is nothing to sneeze at. So go check that out and help pick the PC Gamer top 100. All right, so that will just about do it for us. We've also got I always forget to tell people to go to gamesradar.com/PC, look on the left-hand side, and look for the subscription link if you want to subscribe to the magazine. So that will just about do it for us. We're going to be back here next week to talk about what we see on Star Trek Online, among other things. So we'll see you guys then. For myself, Gary Witta, thank you for coming back. Logan Decker, Evan Lottie, Andy Bauman, we'll see you guys next week.
Later, Gators.
Yeah, and hey, hang on one second. We got talkers in the hall.
Sounds like snappers. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
For a second there, I thought West Side Story was about to happen.
Oh, it was. And we are the Sharks.
Yeah, much better than that other microphone.
Ah, what the hell?
Wasn't me.
Who's playing tones?
I wish I could believe that, Logan. Blizzard offers fabulous prizes to get you. Ah, damn it. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get through this. Ah, what the hell was that?
That's not me. That is so not me. I didn't even move and that happened.
I turned my mic off. Oh. Just the switch. Was that it?
Try that again. See if that...
Oh, hell yeah. What the hell is that, dude?
Wow.
And we're all killed.
Wow. Sorry about
it's
that.
It's like the thing in Firefly. We're all going to start bleeding out of our ears.
Sorry doesn't take it back.
Yeah.
I'll just not turn my mic off, I guess. Yeah.
Mic is hot. Okay, well, I guess I'll just pick up like halfway through that, and you can patch that together.
Yeah, you're good.
Hey, Gary, by the way, the Did you see Fatal Frame for the Wii? Ah! Am I gonna have to buy a fucking Wii now?
Have you been watching some of those Japanese commercials?
No, uh-uh.
Oh my god, they're so great.
For Fatal Frame?
For the new Fatal Frame Wii, what they did in Japan was they basically set, you know, people up in their apartment or whatever playing Fatal Frame for the Wii with the lights down and the volume up, and they shot it all with a night vision camera.
No way.
So you can see, go to game trailers and type in Fatal Frame, okay, and they'll come right up. And you can see these, like, Japanese, and you can hear all the kind of raw sounds coming out of the TV, and the guy's going, no, like,
yes.
Gary,
that was good, just like old times. You watched that video?
I watched the trailer. Okay, number one, the advertisement was great, but the gameplay footage scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah, it's going to freak you out every time.
Because you know what? Because usually the ghosts are transparent, and when I saw the guy walking up the stairs, I nearly shit my pants. Because, you know, you look at the perspective, and you feel like you're playing the game again.
Oh, yeah. And you know, and you imagine playing it with the Wii with the motion controls where, yeah, you know, you're moving the flashlight around and the camera with the controller. It's going to, yeah, feel more like you're really there. It's the only one of those games that's ever really captured that particular kind of horror you get from those Japanese horror movies, you know?
Absolutely.
Silent Hill and Resident Evil, like zombies and monsters, like that's all pretty scary, but there's something about those creepy Japanese ghosts, and Fatal Frame does that better than any other game.
And the fact that, you know, you have to get so close to them in order to, you know, to get your good shots.
To get their photograph, yeah.
And it's terrifying, you know, because your instinct is to run. Yeah, you know? So obviously, okay, the jig is up. Now I have to get a Wii, so I may as well do it now rather than later.
Yeah, it looks like this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
I honestly had to put Fatal Frame 2 away, and I just had to stop playing it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. You know, I sat down with it with the whole idea of, oh, you know, I'm going to turn the lights down, and it's going to be all spooky, but, like, I was shitting myself. I just couldn't play it.
There's medication for that, or at least I...
Never eat at that restaurant again.
You guys are giving me gold right now. That's what I'm saying.
Did you ever see that Japanese video where they had a bunch of kids sitting around watching like the creepy ghost on the TV, and it was actually like a real person in the ghost makeup, and then she came out and crawled out of the TV, and the kids are fucking freaking out.
No, I want to see that. Link it up.
That's a...
There's that one. That one is my favorite. And the other one where the guy makes his kid watch one of those JPEGs or one of those GIFs. He's like, can you see the creepy thing in the GIF? And then like 20 seconds in, like some fucking face jumps out at you.
Yeah.
The kid looks like he's going to just, like, the kid is just scarred for life.
I sent one around Future one day, and then it was great because you could hear people scream around the building as they watched it.
Never, ever. I won't open anything that says .gif anymore. Because I just don't think they're cool. They're too scary. I mean, it's like, it's not even that clever, but it always gets you.
Yeah.
Every time. Every single time.
Even Hamsterdam dance.gif you want to open yet?
I will not open any GIFs.
Kitty cat dance? Dance.
Does Hamster Dance still exist?
I think so.
Does anything ever die on the internet?
That was like the height of innovation on the internet back then.